Thank you for joining us for Mito Action's podcast, Energy in Action. I'm Kyra Mann, CEO of Mito Action, and I'm your host. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and be part of our community. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Energy in Action. We are excited to have with us today the co-founders of Cure ARS, Ashley Rowland and Desiree McGee. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Kyra. Thank you.
Yes, great to have you here. So let's just kick off the conversation. I'd like to get each of you to share with us what your journey has been like with mitochondrial disease and how it's affected each of you individually with your family. Desiree, you want to start and share with us your story about your amazing Daphne?
Sure. So my daughter's name is Daphne. She's 6 and a half now. We live in California. I have a 14-year-old older daughter and a husband. We both work full-time. And we live on the other side of the country away from all of our family, which makes situations sometimes complicated. We've been in this journey, though, for several years now. Daphne was diagnosed at 1 year old. We started her diagnosis just before she turned 6 months, so we had a pretty quick road to diagnosis for her. And then since then, we've really just kind of maintained doctor's appointments, all of her plethora of therapies. School has really kind of, I think, been the biggest challenge for her, you know, getting her the access to what she deserves to receive. And she's pretty mild in her mitochondrial disease as a whole. And I probably should mention that her disease has two names. It's actually called LTBL and COX-PD12. That's leukoencephalopathy with thalamus and brainstem involvement from high lactate, also called combined oxidative phosphorylation deficiency 12 from an ERS2 mutation. And primarily it affects Daphne with speech delays, hypotonia. I mean, there's a neurological component, I'll say that. So she does have global delays in learning and performing kind of everyday tasks. In 2017, I started a nonprofit, Daphne's Lamp, just trying to channel my energy somewhere after being given the diagnosis that your child had an unknown timeline and was going to eventually die of progressive fatal condition. And that was really great for a while until I met Ashley. And I'll let her introduce herself first before I dive into kind of how we came about to ourselves. So go ahead, Ash.
Okay, so my name is Ashley Rowland and I live in New Jersey. I have a daughter named Aubrey. She's 3.5 years old. I have an unaffected son. He's 10 months and my husband. Aubrey's disease is called LKEMP or leukoencephalopathy with ovarian failure from the AARS2 gene. That's her specific type of mito. And she was diagnosed at 2 years old. Her initial symptoms started around 11 months. And we initially noticed was when she had a high fever, all of a sudden she started to have neurological symptoms. She all of a sudden couldn't sit or stand or walk. And she had some abnormal eye movements. And we took her to the ER initially, and that was pretty scary. And they didn't really have an answer for us. At first, they thought she was having some sort of seizures caused by the fever. And they sent us to a neurologist. But Aubrey is mild as well in her disease, because when her fever came down, she just kind of returned to normal. She does have some hypotonia, but she started walking around a little before she turned 2, around 21 months. So she did have a delay in walking. But we struggled to figure out what was going on with her, because she was pretty typically developing in other areas. She, you know, was learning other skills. She just had a delay with walking and she had these strange symptoms when she had a fever. And so eventually they sent us to genetics, and genetic testing took several months. And when we finally got the results, it really wasn't the result we were expecting. We struggled at first to understand and figure out her diagnosis. We weren't given many resources. We weren't referred to any other doctors. Her neurologist just basically told us, you know, take your child home and enjoy your time with her. And we were not expecting that. So at first it was kind of a shock. I was connected with Desiree because Desiree and Daphne both have similar types of mito caused by the same group of genes that all end in ARS2. I found a lot of information by speaking with other parents and finally seeing a mito doctor. And it was definitely a struggle. But when Desiree and I met, we just decided that, you know, we wanted to do more for our kids. We weren't ready to accept the answer we were given.
Yeah. And for both of you on opposite sides of the country, getting these diagnoses, and you got them in
mito time pretty quickly, right? Because we know that for most people with mitochondrial disease, the diagnostic journey is 8 to 9 years. So you got these diagnoses really quickly and you both went into action, right? You went in to learn everything you possibly could about this disease, contacting researchers, contacting pharmaceutical companies, and advocating for your child. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like?
I'm so far into the journey now. I'm honestly about 6 years in. In the early years, so my diagnosis story is a little shorter than Ashley's because she's a little fresher to it. I feel like I've said it for so long. But in the beginning days, my husband and I, every text exchanged or email between the two of us was around mito. We were constantly Googling, trying to figure out what the future for our one-year-old looked like. We had no idea. You know, at that point, she could not sit up. She could hold her head. She was so floppy. Sorry, you're going to hear her in the background. She was so floppy. We had no idea. So we went from doctor to doctor, and all of those early appointments were about 4 hours in length, and there really wasn't much hope. I scoured Facebook groups. I spent so much time in there. It's honestly probably unhealthy how much time I spent there. I created amazing relationships with some very knowledgeable and strong mito moms. And it really shaped, I think, the person that I am today. It taught me to not sit back and just accept the unknown future for my child, to find papers, to really dig into the disease, I had to be the advocate for my child because nobody else had the ability. I mean, even our own doctor said, look, we have a ton of patients. If you find information, we need you to bring it to us. We don't have the time to go and research in detail all of this information for 80 plus patients because they're all so complex. So I was keeping a rolling action item list, something that I use in my everyday job, going in with questions for our team. What about this supplement? What about this? What about like just all of the what ifs? And so that I could at least knock it off, put the answer down, know that we crossed that bridge and then reevaluate it later. But it was exhausting. And I think it accelerated my aging timeline. But I mean, I met amazing people and I wouldn't replace 1 minute of the journey, if I had to do it again.
Yeah. And that piece is so important, is connecting with other families, other moms who understand what you're going through, right? Because together, your power together is unstoppable. And it didn't matter what the doctors were telling you about Daphne's prognosis or Aubrey's prognosis. You knew there was something different for your child and you were hell bent you were going to find it. Right?
Yeah. And
absolutely. So tell me how the two of you connected.
Because Aubrey and Daphne both have similar genes, we were connected through kind of network.
Okay.
I actually made a Facebook post years ago. I sent it to Ashley after we met, and it was of a horse's butt. Obviously, there's another name for butt that kind of rhymes with our gene name, ARS, A-R-S. And I put it out there as kind of a funny, like, hey, pay attention to me. Cause right, all of these posts in these massive Facebook groups get lost. And I said, I'm looking for all of these genes. Does anybody in here have these? You know, there needs to be a presence. Our kiddos' conditions are not even represented on the main mito pages, you know, especially new families that are very new to it that can't even pronounce a lot of the names in the condition. When you don't have any information out there presented, where do you turn? When Daphne was diagnosed, she was told to be one of 18 in the world. That's pretty small. Aubrey was one in, was it 25, Ashley?
Yeah, one in 25.
So when you're talking that in a world population of hundreds of millions of people, you're like, how often am I actually, how, what's the likelihood that I'm actually going to find somebody, right? Turns out to be very likely because in the first years of Daphne's diagnosis and starting my first nonprofit, Daphne's Lamp, I was finding a patient probably once every 6 months. Now I seem to be finding them once every couple of months. And now I have a patient population of around 50 plus, and same thing for Aubrey, right, Ash?
Yeah, I have about 50. And we both have learned that just because they're not mentioned in a research article doesn't mean that's actually the number of patients out there. Not everybody is in research. So the number is grossly miscalculated.
We don't want to find more kids, but we're glad you're finding more children and families so that you can connect to one another and support one another, right?
Yes.
So
it's a horrible disease. You don't wish it upon anybody, but I do get really excited, giddy whenever I find them. And of course, I kind of have to balance that with, I understand that their world has just been totally turned upside down and they're not feeling giddy or happy for finding anybody.
Right.
But I am just knowing that all of the research that we've done, all of the families that I find, I'm literally able to hand it to them like on a silver platter, that they don't have to go and dig what took us years to figure out, cocktail components and doctors and treatments and what your progress is potentially going to look like. We can go and tell them because it took us, you know, a long time to figure that out. We didn't have anybody to give that to us.
Right. You've done the work for the families, and that's amazing that you can share that. So now let's fast forward. You guys meet, you support one another, you're sharing ideas. And just recently, in the last couple of months, you came together to form a new organization called Cure ARS. Tell us about that decision.
Yeah. So Cure ARS actually was, we first started talking about the beginning of last year. You know, because of COVID, it took a while for us to get nonprofit status. But at first, it was just kind of an idea. We were discussing how could we raise money for research? How could we help our kids? How could we help other families, not just kids, affected? And so our first step really was we formed a Facebook group around the genes, and we started to find families. And very quickly, within, I want to say like a month, we found over 50 families that were already in our group. And that's pretty amazing when you're talking about ultra rare conditions. And then we decided to, you know, reach out to researchers and see what kind of interest is out there. And we found that there is interest. The biggest barrier, obviously, is funding. And we started to talk about how we would come up with that funding. And basically, that's kind of how we came to our decision that we needed to form a nonprofit so that way we could potentially fund a research project.
You guys have a big event coming up in February, a conference. So tell us about that.
Yeah. And let me just add quickly before we move on to the conference, just for those listening that may not have a clue what we're saying with MTARS genes or ARS2 genes, I'm going to just list them off. The genes, you almost can go down the alphabet and call them out. They're AARS2, CARS2, DARS2, EARS2, FARS2, GARS, HARS2, IARS2, CARS, LARS2, MARS2, NARS2, PARS2, RARS2, SARS2, TARS2, VARS2, WARS2, and YARS2.
That's a lot.
So there are 19, and you can pretty much find any of our posts hashtag with all of the genes on our Facebook page, Cure ARS. But I just wanted to get that out there because people may not, we have been on calls with individuals that unfortunately are not told much about their conditions. And they're like, oh, I got on this call because it was a tRNA synthetase condition. Well, yep, that is correct too. So we can help you kind of navigate through your genetic paperwork if you're not really aware of your disease specific classification.
One of the things you'll find, and I mean, I'm speaking to the choir here about you, the mito community, is that how informed families and parents are about the specific gene mutation and how important it is to understand that as you're looking for potential research opportunities or clinical trials, and also connecting with other families to really understand that genetic mutation. So if people are interested in learning more about all the different, the 19 various types of ARS, you can go to the Cure ARS website, and that's just www.curears.org. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. So to dive into the symposium, we organized it because of what Ashley mentioned earlier. There's a lot of research happening out there, sometimes amongst researchers that are the best of friends, but there's not a lot of collaboration happening. And to be honest, we were asked from the medical community, what is happening out there with your condition before anybody else was going to commit and dive into sponsoring research for us. So we formed the symposium, which is February 10th. It is a one-day event from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. East Coast time. The agenda is up on our website. It contains some of the most world-renowned doctors and researchers, which is pretty phenomenal. I think Ashley and I are still pinching ourselves every day for the lineup of individuals that we got. And some people even ask us, how did you do it? Well, we just asked and people said yes. So I think the community is just as excited. And we are very happy that we're actually partnering with Children's Hospital of Orange County. They're providing their Zoom platform to us and staff. So thank you so much to Dr. Abner and his team. And CHOC and UCI were recently named as a NORD Center of Excellence. And this is one of their focuses to help patient organizations facilitate meetings and collaborate on research like this. So we're really honored actually to be the first ones to do this. And the goal of the symposium, like I said, is to bring worldwide collaboration between researchers and clinicians. We want to help build a stronger working relationship, put patient faces to some of this data that's actually happening, let them know the impact that they're making, because it's become clear that they know each other, they don't discuss the research openly, and we want to change that, because in order to bring a true advancement to learning and treatment, we want to avoid duplication of efforts and ultimately bring a positive impact for the families and patients involved.
Right, exactly. Because everyone has limited resources. It doesn't make sense to be to duplicate efforts. And if everyone can communicate and work together, we'll get through this so much faster and get to therapies and a cure. So it's really, really important. And we're grateful to organizations such as Cure ARS that force us to come together, right? To say, we need to do this. We need to do better. We need to work closer together. So I commend you for taking on that within the mitochondrial disease community. So even though you're focused, the conference is focused on the clinical and scientific side of the disease, is it open for patients and families to attend as well?
Yes. Yeah, so patients can attend. They will not be able to actively ask questions, but they'll be able to attend and listen. And it is very scientific, but we encourage patients to attend because, you know, there will be a lot of good information about the different conditions that they can learn from. And they can also hear the different research and future research that is going on.
And I do want to say it's more important for them to attend the actual event than try to watch the recording, because there is going to be a lot of unpublished information shared. So unfortunately, several sections of the symposium are not going to be able to be recorded for that reason. So they're not going to be able to catch it if they don't attend. And we are going to be partnering with MitoAction to try to provide sort of patient information rollout. What that's going to look like will soon to be decided. But right now, Ashley is pumping out some kind of informational graphics to try to help just explain various things that you could possibly see on the symposium. And then we will make sure that there is a much more layman's terms. I mean, Kyra is going to be amazing at helping guys. We want this information to be available to the families. We know that people often are given a diagnosis paperwork and that's it. And they go home and they have no idea really what to do with it. And especially for our international families, patient standards just do not translate well across the pond. So we want to make sure we change that for them as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I would encourage people to pay attention to the posts that Cure ARS is making over the course of the next couple of weeks leading up to the conference, because those key facts and terms that you guys are sharing will be a good foundation, so that as people start to listen to some of these sessions, it's not so overwhelming and you're trying to figure out what all these acronyms are and what is this they're talking about. It'll help kind of give you a setup for what's to come in some of the conversations, so you have a basic understanding of some of the things that are going to be talked about at the conference.
Yes. And we have everybody's title for their presentation. So we have a night and we've talked to all of the researchers and doctors. We've Zoomed with the majority of them. So we know what they're going to be speaking on. So we know how to help provide a little bit of an upfront explanation, as well as kind of put a bow on it after it's all done and explain why their efforts are important, potentially why we need to go their route for research and how we're going to need the families. I mean, we have a shirt now that says power in numbers, because truly, if we don't have all of the family support and the data, the natural history data and the medical records from these families to help fulfill our patient registry and potentially some other collaborations down the road, that is what the researchers actually need to get a really cohesive look at the community at large, so that they can really gear treatments. Ashley, help me say this a little bit better.
all that information, patient history, patient records, different collaborations that we could make and learn from will help us understand the diseases better. But also once there is a drug, hopefully that's identified, that information can help us figure out endpoints for a study. And in endpoints, I mean ways to measure if the drug is actually helping the patients improve in their lives and in their daily abilities. And all that history is very important for researchers to understand the patients.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's so important for the patient community to understand the impact that they can have in participating in clinical trials without actually taking a therapy or a potential therapy, right? You can provide your information. You can share what your journey has been. You can enroll in registries. And all of that information is really, really important as trials are developed. And as you said, endpoints are determined and what those outcomes are that are meaningful to the patient community. So there's so many ways to get involved. Can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned registry. Does CureARS have a current registry? Do you have plans for a registry?
We have a registry through CORDS at Sanford Health. It actually is launching soon, so it's not launched yet, but we started the process of creating the registry, and right now it's just in the works. However, once that launches, patients will be able to go in and register. And that will provide us with some information as well as provide that information to researchers at a de-identified level, meaning the patients who share information, they will not share the patient's name or any information that would identify the patient, but it would share information about their history and, you know, what disease they have, which gene they're affected by, and that kind of information.
Exactly. And really important information for the researchers to have access to better understand the disease and, you know, the evolution of the disease and how it impacts families and patients on their day-to-day journey. So stay tuned for more information about that from CureARS and how you can participate in the registry once that is live. So what's next? We've got a great conference coming up. We've got a registry that's in the works. What else is in the pipeline for CureARS?
Right now, we've been working to really join together patients. Like we said, we started a social media group. It's called ARS Gene Community. So if you do have an ARS gene, you're welcome to join that Facebook group. Also, we have received patient referrals from doctors to our organization. We have a letter from GeneDx that is sent to newly diagnosed and hopefully patients who are previously diagnosed, giving them information about our organization. And then obviously we are actively reviewing proposals for research and we are actively fundraising for those projects. And so that's basically what we have been working on. But Desiree, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, we have a lovely shop on our website with some goodies, some of them handmade, they're all handmade actually. some t-shirts, bracelets, hats that all proceeds go to fund the cure. And then we do have an event coming up in New Jersey. If you happen to be local, that's going to be a run, walk, race at the Raritan Valley Community College. That I think is going to be in April and will be open to outside participants.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of really great stuff coming up. And I would encourage everyone again to stay in touch with you through your website and social media to hear what's going on. You know, if you have families, our mitochondrial families are so connected. If you have a family that's, you know, searching for a diagnosis and potentially could have a connection to an ARS mutation, I would encourage you to connect them with Desiree and Ashley so they can learn more.
Yeah, that would be great.
Wonderful. Well, ladies, thank you so much for coming and joining us today and sharing all that's going on with CureARS. I can't even tell you. You two are amazing, right? You're two moms, you're working full time, you're raising your families, but yet you have become such incredible champions for this community. I don't know where you find the hours in the day, but you get it done and you really are making an impact for this community. And I just want to thank you on behalf of all of us. And however MitoAction can support you and what you're doing, we look forward to partnering with you and to supporting your efforts in any way that we can.
Thank you so much, Kyra.
Thank you, Kyra.
Thanks, ladies. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Energy in Action.
remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps to boost us up the charts and makes it easier for others to find us. You can find all of the links and details that we share today in the show notes or at mitoaction.org. Have a great day, and we look forward to having you join us next time.